This is Marga Ramos.
Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View. I'm your host, PK, your humble host, PK, and I'll be with you for the next hour. And I'm under a lot of pressure tonight because my mom's here with me in the studio, and so she's seeing my humility and my wisdom flow forth here. But I'm going to have an interesting guest, hopefully, coming on a little later, and I'm thankful that she was going to take a nap because of the time frame. She's going to take a nap and join me here. First of all, I want to say again, thank you to BBSRadio.com for helping me exercise my free speech, and for BBSRadio.com and the alternative radio network that it is, where we can have our say and interview people without any pressure from the mainstream or censorship from the mainstream. And I stand with BBSRadio.com in support of our First Amendment rights. Of course, all of the Bill of Rights, but especially for these purposes, the First Amendment, and to hell with Joe Lieberman, who would like to be able to have a switch to turn off the internet or censor us at will. So, you know, he's Israel's biggest senator, and we don't need any more of this nonsense. We don't need the internet censored. We don't need it shut down. We don't need it regulated. We need freedom, and that's why we're here. And so there you go, my little spiel about free speech. And tonight, before I get on, my guest who will be joining us later is Karen Kwiatkowski, and she is a retired U.S. Air Force lieutenant colonel. And I became a fan of hers on the great website of Ludwig LouRockwell.com, and I've seen some of her essays there, and I really liked what she had to say and what her writing style. I believe she was in the Pentagon the day that it was hit by the missile or the plane or whatever fantasy creation that the establishment tells us it was, because I certainly believe everything they tell us. And so I've liked her essays, and it's so interesting that a lot of our military personnel, especially generals and whatnot, it seems like that they have to be retired first before they can speak their minds. Yet they're defending our rights, which of course include free speech and of course the Bill of Rights, but yet they're not allowed to speak their minds while they're serving. So I see some irony and hypocrisy there. Not that I'm calling for them to mutiny, but they of all people should be free to speak their minds, because if they're defending our rights and they're putting their lives on the line, certainly I'd like to hear what they have to say, wouldn't you? So that's where I'm coming from. I'm also seeing that there's a little steam growing to address this whole tragic Bradley Manning situation. I think the young fellow's a hero for what he did. It's a shame how he's being treated. He swore to uphold the Constitution as the military does, and they're sworn up as they are sworn to uphold the Constitution, which includes the Eighth Amendment, which clearly says there's to be no torture, unusual, cruel, or unusual punishment. What don't they understand about that? What doesn't the CIA, the military, and the federal government understand about the Eighth Amendment, which says, again, there's no cruel and unusual punishment? What don't they understand about that? I'd love to hear their excuse. I mean, they're probably listening. Oh, and before I go on, I want to say hello to some friends. I'd like to say hello to Rich in Thailand. He's been a good supporter and helped me find some interesting people to speak with, and he provides me some interesting information. I'd like to say hi to Tom and Therese if they're out there. Mary Ann, who's here in the studio with me, and Josie, Diane, and Evan, if you're out there. So I like the fact that you might know that you're that you might be listening, and I hope you are if you can. I know it's a time frame thing, as we're on the East Coast, we're on at 12 a.m., and so that's difficult for some people, but not for me. But anyway, I mentioned Atlas Shrugged last week, and I really enjoyed it. I recommend seeing it. It got a lot of negative reviews, of course, by the usual statists or the you know, the usual modern liberals who either don't understand what Rand had to say, or of course they twist and smear what she had to say, and they turn that into a negative review. But maybe that just encourages other people to see it. I've heard, I think it's only playing in over 300, something like 330 or 350 theaters nationwide. But I hope it does well, and I think it was pretty well done. I like the Dagny's the character of Dagny and Hank Reardon. I like what they had to do. Let me say that this is written in stone, that the movie, I don't care what the movie is, it will never be as good as the book. I mean, sometimes they say it's as good as the book. Well, that must mean that that person's subjective view is that it, the screenplay and everything, the characters, the actors, were right equal with the book. But I see how, I don't see how a movie could ever be as good as the book. But I liked it, and I encourage people to see it. And I would like to say on my own behalf, speaking for Ayn Rand here, and I think she would agree with me, or be happy that I would once again clear this up, is that Rand was not pro-bigness, pro-big business per se. She was pro-free enterprise. She would have been appalled by the bailouts. She was opposed to corporate welfare, to protectionism, to political privilege, to subsidies. And I said, like I said, corporate welfare. She would be opposed to all these things. Her businessmen and women had integrity, and they were principled. And the only issue I take with that character of Hank Reardon, and I'm not, don't recall if it's Rand's exact dialogue, which they used a lot of in the movie, but when he said that, when he was questioned by someone who ultimately is helping to betray him, I think, is that, well, you just want to make money. You're all about making money. And Hank Reardon said, well, yes, that's, I only want to make money. Well, that there's a little prerequisite to that, is that, you know, money is the reward, not the purpose. The purpose is, of course, of people with integrity, like myself. People in businesses with integrity want to produce the best product and or service that they can. And, you know, again, the money is the reward, not the purpose. The money will come later with their success in the marketplace. Or if they want to produce a second-rate or a third-rate product, knowingly, not that they're trying to deceive anybody, but, you know, if you don't want a Caddy or a Rolls, there's a Chevy or there's a you know, a cheaper Toyota available to you. So either way, they're producing, they should do the best they can to produce at that level and reap the rewards or bear the losses and not expect the fellow taxpayer or the government to bail them out. So on this show, I jump to a lot of different topics because I can, but they're all tied in together. And as a self-proclaimed free market economist, I have an overview of the economy, which includes history and economics and philosophy. So I see them all sort of complementing each other. And this is something that I've learned along the way and that I've amalgamated, if you will, into where I'm coming from. Now, I'm going to be talking about 9/11 again tonight and neoconservatives or the neocons, which a lot of people don't know that much about. But talk radio is poisoned by neoconservatism, if you will, as is Fox News. And neocons are actually in, or neoconservatives are in there. They've weaseled their way into the major media, including CNN and, you know, someone who would say, you know, maybe more the left side of things. They're probably even embedded in NPR. And neoconservatives, which have infiltrated, the, you know, pretty much the Republican Party, they come from the left originally. Their hero was Leo Strauss, who believed in lying or being underhanded to achieve goals. And sort of in a nutshell, they, the neoconservatives, they're big government conservatives. They support empire, they support war, they support a huge military industrial complex, and they support unyielding support for Israel. A lot of them are Israeli firsters, or, you know, Israel firsters, and I'm sure that many of them have dual passports, which is not illegal, but it sure stains what they're up to, and it shows the corruption that's involved. And no honest, true conversation of U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East can exclude U.S. support of Israel for over the last 40 years. And on this show, I am not afraid to talk about it. And if you know anything about me or my bio, I reject the usual smears of racism, anti-Semitism, anti-Semitic as just another way to try to censor people and close out what they have to say. So you'll never hear me back down from criticisms of U.S. foreign policy, especially, and when it involves the Middle East. Because as I'm fond of saying, America had no enemies in the Middle East before 1948. So come up to today, and the terrorism that we have that's throughout the world, here and there, hit and run, this and that, you know, large attacks, small attacks. Well, there's a reason for that. It's not just because they don't just hate Americans because we have McDonald's and we're supposedly free. You know, there's reasons, there's historical reasons that this stuff happens. And since I'm that rare American who actually knows geography, world geography and world history, I boldly tell it like it is about the causes of terrorism and what can be done to eliminate most of it, which has all to do with U.S. foreign policy, which, by the way, is bankrupting our country, because a $1 trillion foreign policy with all these bases, over 700 bases in over 140 countries, foreign countries, is bankrupting us. It can't be afforded. And the Republicans, especially in the conservatives, they're very hesitant to cut back on defense spending and foreign policy intervention in these other countries. By the way, you can call the show and speak to PK, your host, which is me, the mighty PK. The numbers are 530-413-4520 and 530-413-4511. And I don't want to disappoint anyone, but we don't chat about Lindsay Lohan here and Britney Spears, as important as they may be to a lot of the sheeple out there. But so I hope you're out there, Karen. I haven't seen a note yet. I hope you've got all the info. This week, I see that once again, the Federal Reserve, Bernanke, got his back against the wall. I think he's doing hasn't done it yet, he will be soon, another press conference. And this comes about, of course, because of the pressure that Ron Paul has put on the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve, again, is the institution that caused this whole mess, pretty much 99% of this whole mess that we're in now, with the way that they instituted a credit expansion by lowering the interest rate. So that's tied into all this too. And on this show, we cover that just as much as foreign policy and all the things that have to do with the mess that we're in right now. And I see that my new friend Karen is on the line. Karen, are you out there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to Third Stream View.
Great, good to be here.
Would you like some tea or coffee? Thank you. Thank you very much.
I haven't tea here, so I'm good to go.
Hey, thank you. How was your nap?
It was good.
Good. I really
good.
Appreciate it. You know, you may have heard me speaking earlier. I'm a big fan of yours, having read some of your essays at lourockwell.com. And I, of course, have a copy of Why We Fight, and you are also in there.
They did a good job with that.
They did. And thank you so much for what you've done, for what you stand for what you write. And I would assume that you're sort of a fellow Austrian.
Yeah, I mean, I am, but I'm not, like, studied or you know, really that well intellectually grounded in it. But, yes, I definitely, that's where I sit. That's where I am on the spectrum of economics.
Right. You have the gist, you have the general gist of, you know, Austrian theory. So you're certainly a fellow traveler, and thank you for also checking that out.
Uh-huh. For sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Lou Rockwell and the Mises Institute, I mean, that's what it's all about, that education for everybody.
Right. I'm a proud supporter for almost 23 years. In fact, I have a brick in the entryway. They have bricks that have messages from different supporters, and I'm proud to have one of them there. Mine has a musician for Mises. And if you know anything about musicians, a lot of musicians are liberals, and they come from the left. Well, I've never been a liberal. I've been a liberal Republican, but I've never been a modern liberal. I just could never go there. It's, you know, I don't like the knee-jerk self-righteousness, first of all, of the whole thing. So I'm a classic liberal, as you are, the liberty, property, and peace.
Absolutely, and you know, it's funny because, you know, we just had the Earth Day. I don't know, maybe people are still on Earth Month or something, but, you know, they talk about the environment, and so much of that language is couched in everything but liberty, property, and peace. You know, it's everything but that.
Uh-huh. Yes, and, well, I hope that you did your part that day, Karen, and you tried to reduce your carbon footprint.
Yeah, I wrote a letter to the editor. The importance of private property and keeping the environment pure.
Yeah, right. And I want to mention also that thank you for the letter that you wrote to the Libertarian Party National Chair, I believe it was, with your displeasure. I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, of course, I think it was some of your displeasure with the sort of the pro-war stance that the party's kind of taken and nominating clowns like Bob Barr and Wayne Allen Root.
Yeah, well, you know, the way that came about, actually, is I had done a little talk at the Agora Unconference, which is a few weeks ago, I guess maybe a month ago, and I put that on, and Lou Rockwell published the text of that, and in that long, it was kind of a long talk, almost like 40 minutes. In that, I made a mention of the problems with the Libertarian Party, it wasn't the core of the talk or anything like that. And I got some email back from the chair of the LP, and the email was asking me, you know, what I was talking about, which I thought was kind of my initial reaction. It was that was kind of disingenuous. Of course, it was obvious what I was talking about. I was talking about Wayne Root and Barr and all these guys. And but anyway, it turned out good. So I did publish a kind of a response to explain my criticism. Which a lot of people who share that criticism, they like that letter. But then I ended up talking with I can't remember his name, but the chairman of the Libertarian Party. I talked to him on the phone for about 2 hours, and he understood. He did understand where I was coming from, and also, we shared some ideas. And I have to say, I don't know if you subscribe to the LP, you know, their mailings or anything. If you're on their list, LP.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, anyway, they put out, you know, little, like all parties, you know, they put out little press release type things. And I will say in the past several press releases from the LP, they kind of had grown some cojones. And it looked pretty good. I mean, they were really actually talking like what we expect them, you know, to talk about radical freedom and radical, basically, anti-statism. You have to have that. And they've taken a good stance. So it wasn't for nothing, and I did get a lot of people who shared my concerns too. A lot of people were supportive of that, and I felt kind of bad that it got blown up a little bit because that was not my intention. But I guess it did cause some good conversation, so that's good.
Well, yeah, and I like the way you stand your ground, so I certainly enjoyed it, and I applaud you. In fact, I myself have been in the Libertarian Party movement since 1980, and I worked on, Ed Clark's campaign, David Berglund's, Ron Paul's, Andre Maru, Harry Brown, the great, late, great Harry Brown, and so I've got that background. But when Dr. Paul ran, I join the Republican Party because so I could vote in the primary. And I've just decided to stay in the Republican Party and bring my wisdom and humility there so that I could dare I say infiltrate the Republican Party, because as you know, that great American two-party system, it doesn't like third parties, and it's very difficult. So why not stay in the Republican Party? Because I will boldly say that the Ron Paul wing of the Republican Party, that is the Jeffersonian constitutional wing of the Republican Party, is where the Republican Party should be. Thank you very much.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, I'm running for I'm doing kind of that same thing here in just my own district, my own congressional district. We need a long-term Republican incumbent who oftentimes never has any opposition. And he's very much an establishment Republican. And so I'm running right now as a Republican challenger in his primary. Now,
thank you.
You know, where that's going to go, I don't know. But I can tell you right now that I'm the only one of his challengers that he's paying the slightest bit of attention to. Because what I'm talking about appeals to the Ron Paul wing of the Republican Party here. And it's an important message. It resonates with these Republicans. Of course, it resonates with libertarians. But he doesn't care about libertarians. He has had, you know, independents, libertarians, and Democrats run against him, and he doesn't have to pay the slightest bit of attention to them, because they're not speaking to his party. But I am, through this, what we have of a political system, which, like you said, is very, you know, it's a two-party system, and that's it.
Yes, and thank goodness that you are not a neocon. In fact, as I understand it, I was brushing up on you on Wikipedia a little bit, and you sort of have firsthand knowledge of their schemings against this war in Iraq. By the way, Karen, as clever as you are, do you know what Iraq stands for? Thank you for laughing
in
advance.
I'm not that clever.
Go ahead, tell me. Honey, I'll tell you right now. Idiotic Republican authorized quagmire.
Excellent. I like that. I like that. That's good.
And feel free to use it. Or my alternative, which I am not afraid to say, is Israeli required American quagmire.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, both of those names would certainly fit. And it's very frustrating to me because you know, so many years have gone by now since we lied that into that war. Well, of course, that war was a continuation of a war that previously had been based on lies. Do you remember, you know, in 1991 when we invaded?
Correct.
I don't know how closely you followed that, but
pretty closely.
You know, it was very patriotic. Yeah, it was supposed to be like, you know, real patriotic, and we had all the international support and stuff like that, and all of a sudden we're, you know, we're against this guy. But if you look at the truth of the matter is, I mean, we, our ambassador there basically lied to him. Said, go ahead, do what you need to do. We understand. We said the Kuwaitis weren't slant drilling as well. They were. That was true. They were slant drilling as well. We said that when the Iraqi troops, you know, we had testimony before Congress of terrible atrocities that had been committed in hospitals and whatnot in Kuwait, all made up. And to justify at the very end of this thing why we should go defend Kuwait, which is the most hated, one of the most hated of these puppet countries over there that were created by the British. We had pictures that supposedly were produced showing Iraqi tanks getting ready to invade Saudi Arabia. Those pictures, a few years later, it took a few years, but the St. Petersburg Times down in Florida bought actual spot photographs from the French satellite. I think it was the French or the Russian satellite, of the exact same time frame, showing absolutely no tanks. And so when they FOIA'd the Navy and the intelligence system and asked them for these photographs that had been used in the newspaper and whatnot, we don't see the originals, they miraculously were unable to find them. So, you know, that 91 war was based on lies. And then, you know, we have the bombing for a dozen years in between. You know, we have Madeleine Albright, you know, a soft-hearted Democrat who said, yeah, 500,000 dead babies is totally cool. You know, that's a great price to pay for what we're doing in Iraq. And then, of course, we follow it up with this totally fabricated justification, partly because of Israel's interest and influence, partly because of our own interest in oil, partly because, you know, he's going off the gold petrodollar. He decided to sell some of his oil to the Europeans directly in euros without giving the petrodollar its little boost. And, you know, we make up stories and we have a patriotic war. And, of course, the patriotic occupation, which is destroying both ourselves, I mean, as you know, we have no moral standing whatsoever in the world, in part due to what we did to Iraq. But, you know, and, of course, destroying Iraq. They still don't have their water system back. They still don't have their electrical grid system back. You know, they have their intelligentsia, the people that could rebuild Iraq have left. You know, many of them are living in camps in Jordan or around the world. So, you know, we've destroyed the place. And all these, it's very frustrating to me that all this has happened. The evidence for it is there. Many, many Americans understand and know this, and yet we have absolutely no influence over our government's military machine.
It's awful. You stole my thunder on a few things. You mentioned something that most Yanks, Americans, sorry, don't even know, is that Kuwait was slant drilling into Iraqi territory.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, I remember at the time when those claims were made, I didn't know very much about oil, and I don't know much about it now. And I thought, well, that's an odd accusation. Can they even do that? You know, I didn't, it sounded something like, you know, that you might make up. But, and of course, we didn't trust Saddam Hussein. So, you know, I thought, well, you know, he's probably lying about that. It turns out he wasn't lying at all about it. You know, they actually proved this. And, of course, American people don't get to see this on the front page.
Of course. You also mentioned that the wonderful Madeleine Albright, who, as I understand it, I believe is a Holocaust survivor. Is that correct? I think she went through that whole deal.
I think her dad was. I don't know if she was actually ever.
Or she was a child at the time.
I think she's a child of Holocaust survivors, yeah.
And yet she makes a statement like that.
Well, I mean, look at the way the Israelis treat the Palestinians.
Of course.
They have a Holocaust going on day in and day out. And they justify that in the name of Zionism. So I don't think there's very much of a connection to reality in how Israel views the Holocaust, other than as a way to gain some moral superiority. It's a real shame because
they're perpetual victims.
What a lesson in the deadliness of statism, you know, the Holocaust. What a lesson that could have been. And yet we don't see that lesson being learned at all by the very country that was created on the legacy of that thing.
You know, the other thing that I found funny, and I knew it even then, is that all, you know, so many Americans were gung-ho for war in 91. And they don't remember that Kuwait and Saudi were two of the countries that launched the oil embargo against us back in the early 70s, of course, as a result of propping up Israel. So they were anxious to defend these two thinly veiled dictatorships. And they,
it's funny. When we talk about our policy in the Middle East and much of our foreign policy, you can't really pick on Republicans and Democrats. It's a trajectory that is identical regardless. And I think, you know, Obama certainly has shown this to be true with his presidency. But, you know, we have this so-called the various Arab North African revolutions of different sorts. And you know, we look at this and we say, well, which side do we be on? Which side should we be on? At least the politicians do. And here we are, you know, bombing and attacking the government of Libya, when at the same time we're supporting the government of Bahrain in fighting Bahrain's own, you know, revolutionaries who are in the street peaceably, you know, protesting for, you know, basic democratic rights, et cetera, et cetera. So but we choose our sides. And the tin pot dictators in the Middle East to produce oil and provide us a place to put these massive military bases that we have, you know, they're our true friends. And if you don't do that, if you don't give us the oil, if you don't allow us to put bases on, if you don't do what we tell you, then you're the enemy, and we'll use whatever you know, excuse we can find to go against you. So we're not even consistent, you know, within the Middle East, and I think a lot of people are seeing this.
Well, Karen, based on what you've just said, I've got to ask you, why do you hate America? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sounding like talk radio.
Yeah.
There.
Well, I do. I'm absolutely as you do. I do hate the American Empire. That is an unconstitutional creation.
Definitely.
It is not part of our political heritage. It is part of our political heritage for the last 100 years, but it's not part of our original political heritage. And so I hate the American Empire. Absolutely, I hate the American Empire.
I long for the collapse of the American Empire and the rebirth of the Republic, but I've taken it further because I'm very pro-secession. Because to paraphrase the line from Wall Street, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, secession is good, secession is right, secession works. I think Washington is an irreversible cesspool of corruption.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you there on the irreversible part. I think, in fact, I think a lot of people in the liberty movement and people who are in the Constitution movement, people who care about the way things ought to be from a classical liberal sense in this country, I think there comes a time when you have to decide: can Washington draw back from the precipice? Can it be reformed, or must it be really cut off? And in my view, eliminated. And I don't mean that in a physical elimination sense, but you know, I would have no problem whatsoever in building a great big wall around Washington D.C.
Right.
You know, I would have no problem with turning it into a prison. I mean, you know, it has imprisoned our freedom. It's captured our freedom. It's spent our wealth. You have to decide. And I think that it is irreversible. I think you can see this when you look at the so-called solutions to the debt and the spending that have come out of Washington.
Spend more.
They're fighting and yakking over 1%. 1%,
Well, they don't mention getting rid of the drug war, but, you know, the trouble with drug addiction, Karen, is that the politicians, the bureaucrats, the cops, they're addicted to the drug war and the money and the forfeitures.
Absolutely. And in fact, that would be, you know, if you can envision a kind of a graceful collapse, you know, maybe a waterfall type of collapse of Washington's power and its funding. There's a couple different things that you might imagine would go first or could go first. And the drug war ought to be one of those things.
Definitely.
But we underestimate how great the dependence is of that money. And with the drug war, of course, it comes as a prison industrial complex, which is, which is massive. And
definitely.
Touches every state, just like building an aircraft carrier or a B-2 bomber. Every single congressional district is touched by flow of state stolen money back into the pockets of people who support it. So, it would be nice to think that if we don't, you know, if the country would survive, it would peel off some of this wasteful stuff, this spending, such as the drug war. But I actually think it cannot. Like you said, it's addicted to it. And, the changes that you would see just along the borders, the changes you'd see in Mexico and some of these places, it just by our elimination of the drug war, would be so wonderful for peace, property, you know, safety, freedom, prosperity, the whole bit. And yet it won't happen because, especially in a time like we are now where, you know, the economics are bad. They're suffering from statism in this country, from decades of statism. And of course, the Federal Reserve. So you have this situation where, you know, if I've got a job in the prison system, if I've got a job as Border Patrol, if I've got a job as a paid government informant or witness against people that smoke pot, you know,
hello?
I can't afford to give that up. I can't afford to give that up.
You're right. And I hate what's happening to our country now. And I also, you know, I don't like the uncertainty. And I'm speaking for myself right now. I don't mean this to be arrogant. Is that I'm in the black. I'm comfortable financially, but I'm very worried. I'm very worried about people around me. I'm very worried about so many unemployed. I worry about the possibility of food riots, possibility of civil war between the haves and the have-nots. Unlike America's never seen before. And a lot of the have-nots today, Karen, are regular working folks or blue-collar folks who don't have a job, who otherwise are fine, good, honest, law-abiding citizens, but they could be seriously backed into a corner. And I hope it doesn't happen.
Right.
But I've been stockpiling food.
This is precisely what's ticked off these revolutions in North Africa and Middle East. It's in food inflation has done this. I mean, these folks don't hold, you know, high unemployment, and they're spending 50% of their money on food, and it's not fancy food. It's basic staples to get their family through the week or through the month. They don't have enough to eat. They got time on their hands. You get revolutions. That's a recipe for revolution. and so you know, and not in violence too, because you know, it's so silly that the neocon media and neocon elite in this country, they like to tell you how scary Muslims are and how intent they are on ruling the world. In fact, those revolutions led by those Muslim people have been remarkably peaceful and pacifist, right, in many ways. And,
right.
But Americans are not like that. Americans are not like that. Okay, we are not known for our pacifism. Maybe we're politically passive, but when we want something, you know, we're going to go grab our gun and get it. And so this makes this justifies your concern to some extent. Culturally, who we are in this country is not people that are grounded necessarily in our communities as well as we should be, but we're people that have lived good in the past and feel that many things have been taken from us. We are angry. And
yeah.
And we're pretty self-righteous about it. We're pretty self-righteous.
Oh, I know.
And you know, the funny thing to me about true Christianity, when it's practiced, is not, you know, self-righteousness is a sin. I mean, you're not going to be, you know, you're supposed to be humble. That's supposed to follow the example of Jesus. Well, you know, in the Islamic communities, they hold that same thing very important. People don't, you're not supposed to hold yourself up above people, et cetera, et cetera. So they actually live their religion a little bit, you know, in some ways more than we do if we call ourselves a Christian nation. And we are very entitled. We're in a very entitled people. And entitled people who get their toys taken away from them and have to go hungry and don't have jobs, we are not, we could be very unpleasant to each other.
Well, you're so right about that. However, I agree totally with you. However, they might not have much recourse anymore because you know what? This is China's century. This is Asia's century. Yeah. Things have changed. Wealth has shifted. And I don't understand why this has been ingrained into us, this mentality that America has to be the best, has to be first and everything. Well, you know, I just think that we should try to be the best we can. And if other countries produce something better, so be it. I don't have this type of ego about things. I'm realistic and I've traveled a lot, Karen. I've been out of the country a lot.
This egotism. I think the egotism in part is promoted by the power elite. You know, it's promoted by the people in the government. Because if they can't get us hyped up about this or that, they can't make us do anything. Which, of course, is the great power that we can simply say no. We can simply stop cooperating with government. We don't have to pay our taxes. If we don't have the money, I mean, it'll be just like with the people who got in these mortgages that they can't pay. They just don't pay. They don't move out, but they don't pay. Now, that's to a bank, and you say, well, that's a private enterprise. Well, banks in this country are not private enterprises. We clearly found that out when they got bailed out. You know, they are part of the government.
You are so right, and as I like to say, that the masses blame the bankers, and it's true that they deserve some of the blame. However, you know where I'm going with this. They're all tied into the Federal Reserve System, the Fed, the central bank. Karl Marx said that the central bank is the jugular vein of any country. And so you see, this is the connection, the Fed. And you've seen what came out last week or 2 weeks ago. They've printed all these documents. They've lent money or given money to all these foreign countries and foreign banks.
It's just the Bank of Libya they gave money.
Yeah.
Can you believe
it? It's ridiculous. Now, back to the neocons. First, I want to say something about Iraq. I, of course, opposed both wars in Iraq. I opposed Saddam's execution because I thought, well, if they're going to execute Saddam, Bush and Cheney should be on the same platform as several other people. There's many prominent people in American government I would like to see tried and executed immediately. And I don't say this as some bitter Marxist or some type of shay. Mm-hmm. I talk about justice because at the same time, don't want to take anybody's property or rights away. But I wouldn't care if the people who got us into this and continue to do this were held seriously accountable. Let's look at Iraq.
You know, it would be in terms of their property, there would be nothing, you know, let's say that making the criminal case is difficult. We could certainly make a civil case that they should pay for the war. that would definitely remove all their property.
I love the fact that Bush had to change his travel plans a month or two ago. He didn't go to Switzerland. He's afraid of being arrested for war crimes in Europe. I'd love to see that.
Right, and that drumbeat is building. And this is one of those kind of trends that oftentimes we don't see, we don't recognize it until it's already here. But there is a humongous anti-American government sentiment around the whole world. I mean, the Chinese hate us because we're not giving them any return on their investment. and you know, we're not trustworthy in terms of our productivity because of our policies. So the Chinese are deciding not to continue to draw back the debt that they're supporting, and other banks the same way. But people around the world who see how we behave, you know, we take our little drones and we kill a bunch of people and we say, oh, sorry, here's $1,000. When they see that over and over again, it forms a, you know, a hard opinion that they have of Americans. And so we really don't have friends around the world.
Well,
and so what that means is our politicians are increasingly going to be restrained just like George Bush was.
Right.
They're not going to be able to go where they think they are because the rest of the world is asserting itself. And not that we're not asserting ourselves, because certainly militarily we are behaving very badly, very aggressively. I think the rest of the world is realizing that that's about the only card we have to play.
Well, you're so right about this. And again, you being a veteran, if anybody should be able to speak their mind, it's you veterans. And so I applaud that. And I've had these discussions with several vets who are friends, and I've taken a real strong stance against foreign policy and this sort of thing. And they never get mad at me. You know, they agree with me most of the time. And I haven't been in the military, but I don't care. No, I haven't served. Big deal. But I'll debate anybody to the, you know, to the bottom line.
And, you know, to be in the military is I hate to say this, but there's a lot of propaganda that goes along with that. You're not defending, and it hasn't been this way for many, many years. The people
you're defending a globalist
were drafted
empire
in Vietnam were not defending the United States of America.
Wait, now let me tell you about Vietnam, Karen. They won the war, but we had better songs.
Yeah, this is good. Well, and you know, yes, and actually, novels. A lot of great novels came out of that era as well.
And some good movies.
Yeah.
But I wanted to go back to Iraq just for a minute, please. Is that the thing about Iraq is Bush, first of all, Iraq had the most highly the most numerous highly educated college educated Arabs. It had women did not have to dress.
And women too.
Yes. Women did not have to dress a certain way. Alcohol was tolerated. There was a small Jewish community. There was a small Christian community. Saddam kept a lid on sectarian violence. He fought against fundamentalism for over, you know, 30 or 40 years. So, you know, there's this aspect of it. So when Bush invaded Iraq, including Bush 1, Bush 2, he destroyed that small Christian community, he destroyed the small Jewish community, and he caused the plight of millions of refugees. And the feds, because I don't like to say we, I like or America, I always say the federal government.
It's the government that does
Yes,
this, yeah.
The feds. And by the way, on 9/11, I said the chickens have come home to roost, and I was meaning speaking solely of foreign policy. But the federal government, through its military, they bombed water treatment plants in Iraq. They bombed sewage treatment plants in Iraq. Americans have no idea.
It's part of a strategy.
Yes, and that's just horrific. And all these people, you know, all these people died, you know, all this suffering and everything, which brings us to Iran, Karen. Karen, do you know what Iran stands for?
All right, no, go ahead.
You got a pencil? Israel requires American naivety.
Oh, very good.
So there is absolutely no reason to invade Iran. I don't know how much you know about T.E. Lawrence, but he's one of my biggest heroes. And T.E. Lawrence was so correct about the Middle East. He spoke fluent Arabic and French. He pleaded with the Allies at the Versailles when they were at the Versailles conference not to colonize and the Middle East. And he was so right in retrospect.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and you know, truly. It is so arrogant of any state, and it's so predictable of it too, that they will think they know best. And that Versailles conference and the thinking, you know, Wilson's ideas behind all of this, and so many of the other people that they can create the whole world and force people to fit into their molds. You know, it's the evil of statism. And,
that's true.
You know, it reaps the whirlwind, and we're paying for it still to this day.
Now, speaking of acronyms. You're familiar with that lovely organization called AIPAC, aren't you?
Somewhat. I mean, I've never been to an AIPAC meeting.
Do you know what it stands for, Karen? Karen, do you know what AIPAC stands for?
For real or another acronym?
My definition, which is the true definition.
Oh, your definition.
Course.
Okay, good.
You got a pencil, honey? American Israeli parasites against the Constitution.
Oh, that is good.
Thank
that's
you.
Really
I wrote
good.
That.
Yeah.
Karen,
that's
available.
Really
Karen, yeah, I'm available to lead the Tea Party.
Say again?
I'm available to lead the Tea Party.
Good.
I'm
yeah,
like Teflon.
That,
and here's another thing, Karen. I will do it from the bandstand because I'm an accomplished drummer with an R&B band, and I could literally come down and host a Bill Maher-type format, which is what I would like to do. I would love to have my band, and I would like to warm up Ron Paul if he was to run, which I sure hope he will.
Well, tell you what, isn't he supposed to announce tomorrow or soon?
He's supposed to announce, I guess, in May.
Oh, in May. Okay. So
I hope
coming
he
up
will.
Soon here.
Because, you know, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, he's the only person that can beat Obama. Only Republican who can beat Obama.
And he could do it, yeah. You know, it's so funny. I got a call, when was it? I guess Friday or Saturday. A polling call from the Young Republicans. And,
boy.
I've been sick. I'm still kind of sick. So it was hard for me to talk. And
you're doing
fine. In a really good mood when I got this call. But anyway... Say again?
Are you enjoying our little chat?
Yeah, I'm fine. If I have a coughing attack, I'll just put the phone down. But anyway, so this young Republican poller called me, and it's not really a young Republican, it's just somebody they paid to do the call. And then they have you listen to a tape or a recording, and the recording mentioned two people's names as identifying with the Republican Party, identifying with the vitality, the usefulness of the Republican Party. You'll never guess who these two names are, but I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
Newt Gingrich and Sean Hannity. And I about puked. So I'm sitting there, I listen to her tape, and I talk to her, I answer her questions. I say, first off, you know, I said, I grew up a Republican. You know, I support these basic values for the most part. And I said, don't you dare mention Gingrich and Hannity to me as upholding the Republican values. They don't. So anyway, I yelled at her. It was unfortunate. I told her to write it all down, but, you know,
well,
she's just
you know,
a person.
You're right. You know, and Gingrich is heavily tied to the American Enterprise Institute, which is a very pro-Zionist.
And APAC, as is Sean Hannity.
APAC.
So,
APAC,
you know, these guys
American
are...
American Israeli parasites
APAC,
against the Constitution.
Look at the connection that it has.
Well, Karen... Yes. Touching on 9/11 here, I'm a strong proponent of the theory that I believe that Mossad's fingerprints are all over 9/11. Mossad's mantra is, by deception we make war. I believe that, and you as a vet might appreciate this, that Mossad has heavily infiltrated our military and our government.
Well, that's kind of a fact, I think, as far as the penetration part. You know, they, as far as I was concerned, I witnessed basically, you know, the free reign that Israeli generals and other members of the Israeli political establishment have within the Pentagon. And certainly we know well how free their reign is in the Congress.
It's awful.
So, you know, this is a true fact. Our policies are made in part by AIPAC, in part in Tel Aviv, but I think in part by the even more radical Zionism that is pocketed over here and represented by AIPAC. Because here you can actually talk about the word Zionism. You can use that word and you can argue its meaning. You can very freely discuss this in Israel. You cannot discuss it in America. If you use the word Zionism, you better be for it. And if you're not for it, you are an anti-Semite, and that's the extent of the conversation that is allowed in America. So we have a lot less freedom of speech here on that subject than they do in Israel. So
definitely.
Clearly something is happening. I've seen
Israeli publications that prove just what you've spoken of, that, you know, they're critical, they talk about it within Israel, but not out of Israel. And here's where I would like to say that I prefer, I'm waiting to clash with some neocons. I haven't been able to clash with any neocons or Zionists yet, but I'm just waiting for that day, and intellectually, especially on this show. But I prefer the new definition of an anti-Semite, which is a person that Jews don't like.
Yeah, well, it seems to have come into that. Now there is the possibility, and I think that AIPAC and some of these mouthpieces for anti-Semitism, you know, sort of bringing it up constantly as an accusation in this country. If they abuse the accusation, it loses its meaning. So I think it comes and goes in waves.
Oh, yeah, it has. therefore, the two main things that I think 9/11 benefited were first of all, Israel, or the Mossad, Israel, greater Israel, more power, and, of course, the military-industrial congressional complex. To me, it's grown because of this, and Americans are fearful people anyway, and what's that word? They're jumpy. So, you know, and the demonization of Islam. Yes, there are radical Islamists and terrorists, but, you know, it goes back to U.S. propping up these Arab Muslim dictators and propping up the state of Israel.
And even if you had a whole country, which we do not have, but if we did have, you know, the very worst country, which we tried to make Iraq out to be, none of these countries have the slightest capability to threaten American interests. They certainly don't have any capability to threaten, you know, America at home.
Exactly.
In fact, the only country that can threaten us,
Libya,
that's in the Middle East, no, is Israel. I mean, Israel has a great deal of experience with cyber war. They are responsible, maybe with some American help, for the Stuxnet worm that was taking down some of the power systems in Iran recently.
Oh, clearly they know, were.
Yeah, there's one country that can damage our infrastructure. And particularly with in terms of the information technology, and that's Israel. None of the rest of them can even come close to that. So, you know, but yet that's our ally. So, it's a crock of bull, really.
Oh, it really is. Hey,
but
listen,
certainly, Department of Homeland Security did not exist before 9/11. It existed 2 months afterwards.
Well,
so
the state benefited from
9/11.
The Republicans gave themselves a $40 billion raise and gave themselves the Department of, you know, for they failed so badly, they gave themselves a $40 billion raise and created the Department of Homeland Security. Listen, Robert's on line number two. Are you out there, Robert? Is Robert out there on line number two?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure. We don't have much time left. What's on your mind?
Oh, well, I just happened to just listen in, and you know, I was listening to the both of you, and you both have some very good points, but my point of view is that we're headed under a, you know, a two-party, one-headed, two-party, one-headed system where they leave us to argue with ourselves while they're always pulling the trickery behind the curtains of course, 9/11 and so many other situations that they've created just to keep us distracted. I think the argument here would be that we have to negate all these distractions that these people present to us and go after the head of the snake. This is about the New World Order, their agenda, and we have to eliminate these ridiculous situations that they pose to us on a daily basis. I mean, if you listen to Fox News or CNN, it's always the same. It's always the same scenario, same story. They keep us from the truth on a daily basis by simply not ever telling us the truth. Now, the real truth of what's taking place
on Third Stream View.
It is out there. We just simply have to not pay attention to their stupidities anymore and simply say, look, we're sick and tired of your agendas. We're tired of your bull. We know that the vast amount of oil reserves is incalculable, and we know that we shouldn't be paying more than 50 cents a gallon for gas, but here we are. We're paying almost, $5 in California. Here in Arizona, we're almost up to $4 a gallon. These are all distractions to keep us fighting within each other, because a house divided cannot stand. Lincoln said it himself. We have to eliminate the stupidities and look at the truth.
Mm-hmm. And really, I agree with you, and I think that's why Ron Paul's audit the Fed and eventually end the Fed, you know, his exposure of the central bank is, to me, that's the head of it, because that's what funds both the the United States order and the New World Order. And you can see that with the money that is flowing throughout the world from, you know, printed from the Federal Reserve. So, you know, I agree with you. I don't think it's mysterious, though. I think central banking is the great evil. So there you have it.
Well, oh, you're right. And well, we have to look at where the central bank has started. It didn't start here in the United States. It started in Europe.
Of course not.
Right?
Nope. Well, I mean, if Alexander Hamilton had had his way, we would have had a central bank. It is true. But it is clearly a European statist idea.
Well, as I understand it, the Rothschilds are behind it, and their tentacles, and George Soros is a bagman for the Rothschilds, and they were in league with the Rockefellers. To me, that's the power structure. You've got the global Zionists.
If it wasn't Rothschilds and Rockefellers, it would have been, you know, two other families, okay, or three other families. The bottom line is, when an organization can print money, can counterfeit money, and benefit from that counterfeit through first use, you know, it's a criminal organization. Criminal organizations are run by families. To me, I'm not intrigued by, you know, Rockefellers and Rothschilds. They're just a gang. They're just criminals. I mean, criminals,
definitely,
much as we would talk about criminals in the New Jersey Mafia.
They're globalist criminals.
Right.
Sure,
you're absolutely
globalist.
Right.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. You just said it yourself. That's what our focus should be on, to eliminate these people, because there's a lot more of us than there are them. There's almost 7 billion people on this planet. We need to take action into our own hands. These people think that they are above God. They think they are our rulers, and we allow them to imprint this fictitious, delusional structure on us every single day. And they
But the important thing is not to be deluded by it. And seriously, you can't get rid of certain people thinking you're going to kill the head of the snake. The snake is the symptom.
Oh, no.
Okay?
No.
Because you could get rid of certain people or certain families, and you could throw them in jail and let them rot there. But families would emerge to take advantage of a system. So the system itself has to be exposed for what it is and not adhered to and not honored.
Robert, Karen,
is what I think Ron Paul is doing so well when he explains how government really works.
Listen, folks. Excuse me. I've got to start winding down here. Robert, thank you for calling. We're pretty much on the same page, and that's why the show like I have, Third Stream View, and guests like Karen, we're going down that path of exposing these globalist criminals and clearly saying where the problem is with the Federal Reserve, with the foreign policy. We're doing our part going down this path and hoping that more people know about it and learn about it. And thank goodness for the Internet. Thank goodness for BBSradio.com and alternative media, because you're not going to get it from the corporate Zionist state-controlled, you know, CBS, Fox, CNN, that whole infrastructure. And so in closing, I look forward to the day also, as far as this problem, the foreign policy, when Israel gets its boot off America's neck, because I'm an America firster. And, you know, my patriotism is to America and to the Bill of Rights, right, and the, you know, the Constitution, Declaration of Independence. I never confuse my patriotism with loyalty to the government. So as I wind down, Karen, thank you so much for joining me. And I hope I can get you back on the show again sometime soon, because it was a real pleasure to speak with you.
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to. You know, it's great talking to you. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. It's great to get the word out there and have people start to think a little more deeply about what they see going on around them.
Thank you. And I'm going to send you an email again with those little definitions of those. You call acronyms? Is that what you call them?
Acronyms, yeah. That's good. Yeah, I like those. Yeah, do that. That would be great.
Thank you, because that's where I'm coming from. I hope you enjoy my sense of humor. I certainly do. But anyway, thank you again, Karen. I'm going to say goodbye for now, and I'm going to say goodbye to my multitude of listeners and hosts. And we'll see you back here again next Monday evening here on Third Stream View, bbsradio.com, 9 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Central, 12 a.m. Eastern. I'm your humble host, PK, signing off. And thank you again, bbsradio.com. And thanks, Mom. Love you, babe. Good night, everybody.